And now our final presentation. Very pleased to have Sean Freeland from Multimap and John McCarroll, who is also sitting over there.
So for anybody who I haven't met already, I'm Sean. I, for my sins, started Multimap about 11 years ago. And John joined more recently about, what was it, 3 years ago?
Well, 2 years ago.
2 years ago, and sort of kind of started Multimap 2.0 and did a huge amount of the work on our draggable maps and the API. But we'll talk more about that later, won't we? We decided to talk about the first 20 years of internet mapping, and the original goal was to do basically the previous 10 years and the next 10 years. Which we thought would be kind of cool. And then we realized as we looked at it, actually it's been around more than 10 years, and we came to the conclusion after a little thinking that really this stuff all started, certainly the online version, really properly started in 1993. And I'll show you why we think that in a moment. But while we were thinking about this, we realized that actually a lot of people had done really a huge amount of preparatory work in the time before that, that we should be truly grateful for. And I'm sure we all know that expression, those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. The one I prefer is actually those who do learn from history are condemned to repeat this anecdote at presentations, me especially. I do think it's true. So let's just see some of this important preparatory work. Well, one of the most, sort of, certainly one of the early, what did Muki call them, the pioneers, were in fact Turkish, and from Anatolia, produced this very first, now this is pre-Mapnik, okay, as you can you can probably tell, and I think that the, you know, the colour scheme actually could have learnt more from what we learnt yesterday, but it was really excellent early work. No sort of problems with coordinate systems or projections or all that stuff that holds us back. And no worries, because they didn't really worry about the spherical Earth. This really came later, got adopted pretty quickly, really. Pythagoras started it in all in 600, and in a mere 250 years it was proved and generally widely accepted. So it all kind of got a bit complicated then, but thank you very much. Actually did an extremely good job of measuring the circumference of the Earth. He got it really, really accurately. Unfortunately, later people didn't use his numbers. They used other people's numbers and got it completely wrong. He produced the idea of using a grid. And then Ptolemy. Thank you very much. Really moved the whole art form on a huge amount with his definitive work of 140 BC, Guide to Geography. And he laid down not only did he lay down the idea of projections, he published a couple of map projections in that book. And he came up with the early idea of latitude and longitude, gazetteers, and giving the known world a set of coordinates. Now that was tremendous. I'm a real amateur sort of geo-historian. Does anybody actually know about this stuff I'm sort of waffling on? I just pulled this off websites. Okay, if anybody knows about this, you know, and I get it wrong, please speak up. But my understanding is that really not very much happened right in GIS, really, until the 15th century in the publishing and the first printing presses. Note, the Romans conquered the world without moving geography mapping on in the least. Bizarre, but apparently true. So there's a clue there for Americans in the audience. If you want to achieve, you know, regime change successfully, don't get caught up with the technology and mapping, just long straight roads. Or as Ed pointed out when I said this before, build infrastructure, guys. Give the locals infrastructure. What is it? What have the Romans ever done for me? Roads. Really, they were in the 15th century, the first books they were publishing, they were translating Ptolemy's Guide to Geography, 1,500 years earlier or whatever it was, into various European languages and publishing it. Led to a certain amount of activity. This guy's got a lot to answer for, frankly. Anybody who's struggled with Mercator projection, well, you know, it's thanks to him. That's all I could fit on one slide. And also, I'm trying to concentrate on the just 20 years. So just quickly flicking through a few other things that I think are fundamentally important that getting us all into this room today. I'll talk through the middle ones. Teleatlas and Navtech, the two, you know, really dominant global players in terms of commercial digital map data, both formed in the mid-80s, really quite early days, back when they were both formed to create the data sets for in-car navigation systems, when the auto manufacturers thought in-car navigation was a really exciting thing to develop. The auto manufacturers were developing analog systems at the time based on, inertial sensors in the cars and a compass. So it was really early analog technology, pre-digital, bizarrely. And that's how those guys got started. And those first 1985 systems, of course, were pre-GPS. Talking of which, again, it's fascinating to look how long the whole GPS thing has been going on. And I believe that, you know, GPS is absolutely fundamental to, as Ed said, the fact that we can all get together and do this. The fact that we don't need to do the kind of surveying that Ed was showing in that video this morning. But that video he was showing was from the late 50s. The US Department of Defense were certainly conceiving of satellite-based navigation even then. And the reason was they had these nuclear submarines who were disappearing under the ocean for weeks or months at a time, and they wanted to bring up their thermonuclear missiles and blow us all to smithereens. And in order to do that, they had to know where they were to do the targeting. And their inertial the inertial guidance systems, after several months, weeks or months underwater, weren't accurate enough. So they put up this original transit system, just I think it was 4 satellites or 12 satellites or something. And they, to be fair, very impressively, even in 1967, they were opening it up for civilian use. They put up the first, this led to the ideas that led to GPS, first satellites experiments in 74, and then they started deploying the actual, you know, when they got it to the point where, you know, they're comfortable it would work, they put up, I think, 6 satellites a year from 89 onwards. That's right, isn't it? 4 years. Yeah, to get to 24 satellites up there. Which is why I say that 1993 is, in my opinion, the year that internet mapping really, that was sort of year zero, for two reasons. Firstly, GPS network effectively went live. And secondly, that was when this Xerox PARC map server, as I said, now, the web had really started, as I said, in Tim Berners-Lee put up really the first website, the CERN thing, in August 91. So the CERN, the Xerox PARC map server in 93, I think was a real 93, 94, was really marked a sort of turning point. And, you know, if you look at this here, that was, you know, pretty much live, how it was live. The idea of, key thing is the idea of latitude, longitude, and either scale or zoom factor or something like that in the URL. So that's the first time I've seen people actually thinking of, you know, real-world coordinates in the query term of a URL. And I think that started quite a lot. It was quite influential, I think, on a lot of people, including me. I was sort of had been thinking about getting excited about GPS in sort of 94. Sort of 93, 94 onwards. I was working at KPMG in 95 in their media convergence practice, and I knew that GSM phones were getting smaller and smaller and cheaper, and I knew that GPS was out there, and it was really the Netscape IPO in mid-95, and it was suddenly this realization that, you know, all this internet and web stuff was real and really was going to take off in a big way, that got many, many sort of the techies of the time really, really excited. My feeling was you put these three things together, GSM phones, GPS for positioning, and the World Wide Web, and that sort of ménage à trois leads to the idea of a device that's just going to have a button that says where you are and what's around you at any time. So that was the original goal of Multimap, was to create exactly that. Needless to say, other people were thinking the same kind of way. Who heard of Vicinity, US company? Few of us, not that many, it's interesting. MapQuest had been around for a long time before. It was a spin-off of the GIS department of, I think, R.R. Donnelly or something. But Vicinity was a classic US startup at the time. So, 96, MapQuest, as I said, this company that had been a GIS company and it was actually spun out of R.R. Donnelly at the time, went live with their first web mapping service for the US, US only. And fundamentally important, the Clinton White House, one of Clinton's relatively last activities was to phase out GPS selective availability. Who knows what SA was. Yeah, that's when you, right, okay, I don't have to talk about it. As I said in previous slide, it was the Technorati who were getting really, really excited about the internet and the web. A year later, it's the intellectuals and opinion formers getting very, very excited about the web, how it's going to change the world. That was the initial Multimap homepage back there. Multimap actually came from, the full name was Multimedia Mapping, because nobody thought domain names were important back then. That's why I didn't bother with map or maps or something. would have been a good idea with the benefit of hindsight. And the idea was that it reflected the worldwide. I tried to go for 3M, but the I tried to go for MMM, but the 3M Corporation already had it by about a month.
So you've got like the mirror image for the MMM.
That was the original concept, yes, which that was about as far as the concept went. Couldn't everybody kept calling it Multimap. Can't think why, it's just a domain name. Won't talk about that too much, but as I said, the original concept was to do exactly this, was maps on phones. I could not get Nokia or Vodafone to return my calls at the time, either too early or, you know, I should just waffle too much, I don't know. But they nobody really would take it very seriously. What did happen, of course, was the web took off, and internet usage took off exponentially. Mobile usage didn't. It's interesting, people are saying 96 very interesting time to do this because 97 is going to be the year of the mobile internet. Oops, sorry. There we are. I didn't actually put that on there. StreetMap created in 97. We went live with the initial UK maps. Microsoft, interestingly, was getting into mapping about that time with their Sidewalk service, which was a sort of consumer sort of tourism, local information, local content. I think it was even had a little sort of community contribution stuff in it. It did, didn't it? Very, very early, and really quite visionary for friends from Seattle. By this time, the business press was getting excited about the internet and the web, whole new global opportunities, etc., etc. That's what Multimap looked like in November 97. We really did have, I think we had global by that. That's right, beta world maps were in beta test. We had I didn't really understand about gazetteers and things at the time, so you just had to click a different button to search the different gazetteers, which I eventually learned was a bad idea. That was pretty much it. I was basically writing all the code in the evenings and answering the phone during the day and installing servers at the weekend for most of that time, which was pretty exhausting. So we finally raised about £1.9 million in 99 and started recruiting people as much as possible. Meantime, MapQuest had done an IPO and raised $70 million. So that's the problem of being a little too British about these things and sort of maybe going a little too slow. Interestingly, later that year, so that was May, by December, so there is 70 million in the IPO, which probably valued them at a few hundred million. Then in December, AOL announced the acquisition of MapQuest for $1.1 billion. And that, I have to say, that focused quite a lot of people's minds in mapping around the world. I put at the top many internet mapping startups in US and Europe for fairly obvious reasons. And by this time there was increasing excitement from, you could get in a taxi, certainly you get in a taxi in New York, but from the airport to downtown and the taxi driver will be giving you stock advice, stock tips on the way into town, okay? You get a taxi out again, Another taxi driver will be giving you stock tips, irrespective of the fact that you have actually been in New York longer than that taxi driver. The MapQuest acquisition completed in early 2000, and the result was during that time MapQuest, we could not get them to return a phone call. They were just completely involved. Actually, it wasn't early. It was through 2000. They were just completely had their heads down in being acquired. Meanwhile, Vicinity, we discussed earlier, was a sort of classic sort of venture-backed startup doing pretty much the same thing Multimap does on B2B. So store finders, dealer locators for big corporates in the US and worldwide. Very sort of bunch of suits, very business orientated. Their IPO raised $120 million and they peaked to a valuation of $2 billion before dropping, before knocking half a billion off that just through general market noise and trading at 160 times revenues for, does anybody know what's fairly typical for a technology firm today in realistic market and trading multiples? No, 20 times profits. This is before that. They were losing, as I think, they were losing a million a month. Maybe two to three times revenues is probably a fair sense of, It's a typical sort of market value. They were trading at 160 times revenue, which many people consider to be a bubble. burst basically pretty soon after the Vicinity IPO. Actually, a lot of people say it was the day after the last minute IPO, which is probably a little unfair on last minute. Even if it's true. Multimap, meanwhile, was spending a fair amount of the £1.8 million we'd raised on trying to... our focus was, as Mookie described earlier, we're very much into this thing of crossing the chasm and appealing to the mass market and not just to the technorati, to the techies. So we were trying very, very hard to take web mapping to consumers, to the mass market. We put these things on the tube and elsewhere, and it cost an awful lot of money. It was probably worth it because there'd been a whole load of an awful lot of mapping startups, and that really separated the large players from all the startups. However, by 2002. The dot-com slump was really well established. Most of the little internet startups had gone out of business. We were wondering why we'd spent the best part of $1 million on advertising when they were all the competitors were going to go out of business anyway. but it was probably a good thing. Interestingly, Microsoft launched their MapPoint web service around then. That was early high hype levels around .NET at the time. Microsoft acquired Vicinity for $96 million in cash. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it? Except you remember a couple of years ago, they were allegedly valued at $2 billion. And secondly, they raised $120 million. 2 years later, they only had $80 million left because they'd been burning $1 million a month, more or less. So that $96 million included the cash. So actually, the business sold for about $16 million, probably about 100 times down from its valuation at IPO. One of my great regrets is that Multimap didn't actually get, that wasn't a lot, back then that was £10 million. One of my great regrets is Multimap didn't go raise $10 million and acquire them, or at least make a competitive bid against Microsoft. It would have been fun. And we'd have learnt a lot, and we might even have got it. And frankly, we'd have done it. Well, we'd done it. We're recording this, aren't we? We'd have done it differently from Microsoft. 2000. Now I'm not going fast enough, am I? Interestingly, and I haven't put in a chart here of our traffic levels, but it's important to note that the traffic really never dropped. It always kept growing. Sometimes it's growing fast. Sometimes it's growing less fast. But traffic and revenues were always growing, and not just for us, but for everybody involved in internet mapping, pretty much. Certainly, everybody who consistently provided the service. And by August 2004, the Pew is a really respectable U.S. research firm, and they described mapping as the most popular online activity, more popular than email and chat. Steve Coast presented the first ideas for OpenStreetMap at Eurofoo. Who was there at the time? Very influential, very important date. And Google acquired Keyhole, who, as you know, was the company behind the original Google Earth. And John, there were some draggable maps, were there not?
There were, yes.
I don't know about draggable. John knows about draggable.
Yeah, this is where I come in. Basically, I mean, as Sean said, I've been with Multimap for, just about 2 years now. So I'm going to take you through what is essentially the present of online mapping. So this is what map.search.ch looked like on October 2004. This is actually a draggable map. It's a hybrid map, so you've got the road network is overlaid on top of aerial image. You've got POIs that show up on the left using Ajax. When you zoom in, when you double click, the maps smooth zooms out, and it was an amazing thing. This is October 2004. So 6 months later.
Oh, that's 2005. So do you want to just go on? And we'll
yeah, sure. So 6 months later, these guys came along and did something very similar, and that obviously took the world by storm. It had a huge effect on what people thought of online mapping was, because of course Google have a huge number of eyes on their website, so as soon as they did that, everybody saw it. No. Yeah. And not long after, we got a mouse.
Well, a little while after.
Yeah.
You carry on talking, I'll see what I can do.
Basically, what this will hopefully show is. Basically, when Google launched their mapping website, it was obviously US only.
Let me just play the video. Right?
Yeah. And there's no UK maps, there's no maps of anywhere else in the world, and that really wasn't good enough for me, that's not what I wanted. And so I knocked up some code. And came up with this. So this was March 2005, and we actually had draggable UK maps, draggable raster maps, draggable ordnance survey maps back in 2005, and it worked quite nicely. You could drag the map, you could zoom in, you could zoom out, you could do various things. It was quite functional. But I mean, this was my take on Google Maps. I saw Google Maps, I thought it was great. I wanted this for myself, and this was the only way I could think to do it. Other people were coming up with different ways. Of course, not long after Google launched their UK mapping, so they caught up with me pretty quickly, and obviously they got a bit more coverage not long after that. As I say, other people also wanted to use the maps. These people in the US wanted to use the Google Maps to overlay data. People from the housingmaps.com figured out what was going on with the Google API and managed to hack it and put their own data on top of the Google API. Chicago crime map as well, that you've probably all seen, managed to get this data on crimes that had occurred in Chicago and overlay it on a Google map, which I assume they just included the API and it sort of just they managed to get it working. Well, exactly. They used the API, which was the JavaScript that Google were using directly. So they managed to hack into it slightly. And then not too long after, Google launched their API, and that then caused an explosion of these mashups that we all apparently love or hate. So this is 2005. I think it was June. Google launched theirs. Not too long after Microsoft Virtual Earth launched, that I'm afraid that was about the best picture I could find of the virtualearth.com. November, I think, Yahoo launched their Ajax or Flash draggable maps. And then, as I say, explosion of mashups came along. Got the BBC News mashup, so that's all the news stories that are occurring in the UK at the time. Got GMAP's Pinometer, which is a great little site that lets you just click around. You can find out how far it is from the University of Manchester to Oxford Road Station, mile, not too far. And
again, people are using other APIs as well. So Yahoo API, here's one with the earthquakes in California. Here's one showing Twitter's, which is obviously not from from 2005, but Twitter's on Microsoft's API. It's quite hard to find examples of their API.
Should we just flip back to talk through 2005 briefly?
So, do you want to take over?
Yeah, briefly. Well, you come back and talk about map abstraction in a second. So, as John says, there was a huge amount of, there was this sort of mashup craze going on at the time, certainly in our area. But that was a sort of special case of really the early sort of Web 2.0 hype. There was the first WHERE 2.0 conference. So O'Reilly, frankly, have a lot to responsible for hype. They do an excellent job of spreading awareness of these things to a very large and potentially gullible audience. The Economist at the time was describing this as potentially bubble 2.0. And bearing in mind some of the examples we've seen earlier of what happens in bubbles, I think it's worth sort of bearing those kind of things in mind. Microsoft acquired Geotango then, which of course we've latest. Who's seen their thing? I can't remember what it's called now, but the Microsoft thing where they take a bunch of ordinary, they have a bunch of photographs and they create a 3D model from it. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm sure we'll be seeing more of that. So you can see where it all sort of started there. Where were we? Was it slide 30? No, it was after that. So interestingly, back then, as far as you could see, sort of something like 20% of internet users were using web maps. By 2006, it was up to sort of maybe 24%. So increase, pretty impressive. But these are sourced from ComScore. So about 45% of the UK users use maps. About 40% of US internet users use maps. There was also the first sort of major. I think it was the first major sort of OSM. It was the first big OSM get together to do the Isle of Wight. And there was that. Who was at the OS mashup day at Ordnance Survey? Quite a lot of us, actually, yeah, and I thought that was really quite a lot of people were very surprised to see that happen. Not least myself. I'd been down at the Ordnance Survey a few weeks ago at some event where everybody's in suits, and, as you tend to be down there. And then at the mashup day, there are people. I kid you not, people with yellow scarves riding on skateboards. I'm not entirely sure why, because it's peeing down with rain on the day, but it certainly looked good. Mapstraction came kind of end of 2006, didn't it?
I think that was about a year ago, I think.
Early
May, beginning of June. Of course, a couple of guys who may well be in the audience realised that having 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different APIs to do maps was not the best way to do it. And they came up with this handy little way of having one API that just maps onto the other APIs and just makes it so much easier to do a mashup and then flick from one mashup to another if someone starts charging you money or putting advertising on your website for your competitors or anything like that. So this obviously helped a huge amount to get people interested in using other APIs and not necessarily always using Google's API.
I think OpenLayers is doing the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course OpenLayers does a similar thing in a different way and does it well.
Okay. So here we are today. We're now up from 24 to 26% of worldwide users. These are, again, ComScore, consistent set of ComScore numbers worldwide. The UK is still around 45%. The US is still around 40%. So, mashup, craze, bubble, or real sort of upsurge of groundswell usage? Usage, percentage of the general population, not the technorati, percentage of the mass market using online mapping in the two highest penetration countries, US and UK, not really changed very much. Wiggles are wrong each month. Certainly no upward trend. So bubble, craze, long-term change in consumer behavior, don't know. I think Mookie's point about crossing the chasm, is it going to cross the chasm, is really very fundamentally important, because I think right now it hasn't. It's huge with the likes of us, less so with the mass market. First state of the map, I mean, I think we know most of these things. I predict that Multimap will go live with OSM data before the end of the year. This is just a personal prediction, not in my role as founder. I'm told by my legal department sitting in the corner I have to say that, otherwise I'll get shit all the way home. I'm also forecasting that we will see a lot more platform convergence, so use of, my data with my usage profile, my favorite places, my browser history, etc., on the web, on my phone, in the PND in my car, and other sort of smart devices. And people have been telling me every year that this is going to be the year of the mobile internet. Well, I don't think it is this year either, but I do think this kind of thing will finally work and will make it all a lot more usable. I think next year, Steve's forecast that the UK will be complete will be met according to today's definition of completeness. Steve started the conference yesterday morning by pointing out how often OSM and other things evolve, and I think it's important to recognize the definition of complete will evolve towards, I believe, a greater focus on points of interest, quality data, and a sort of deeper and more intuitive and hopefully valuable sort of local content. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the Netherlands, where there's already complete street level data. So therefore, what's the great incentive? What will people be incented to collect in the Netherlands? Well, whatever they're collecting in 2007, 2008, we'll see collected elsewhere in the future, I think. I think the licensing issues, firstly resolved, secondly, the definition of resolved will evolve. I'm expecting in my commercial sector and what Multimap does, I think around the world, we will see this trend as we see in so many things, industries, there's nothing unique or special about internet mapping. It's going to be the same as other things. We will see, two, three, four, however many large global players who provide services to big corporates and have global brands. We will see smaller players acting as sort of niche players. Either specializing in a particular area or in a particular geography, or frankly, sort of, probably getting squeezed by the people who do. But I might be wrong. We will see. 2009, I would expect to see OSM coverage expanding to more than 50 countries and perhaps 10 or so with a sense of completeness in terms of the road network. Though again, complete is fortunately a moving target. I'm expecting to see sort of integrated GPS WiMAX screen devices, increasing battery performance, better screens means frankly these things can practically stay on all the time the way your iPod is effectively on all the time. You just push a button, it takes a couple of seconds for it to wake up, but that's all. So by the time you've got these, and I think the idea of a pocket digital map, not so dissimilar, maybe from a Nokia 7700 or Nokia 800 or whatever they're called now, but mass market, not the likes of us who, we take it completely naturally that you have a separate Bluetooth GPS from your mapping device, but your grandmother won't. Your, non-technical next door neighbor won't go for that kind of thing. But if you tell them this is a map and you put it in your pocket and you can give them to people as Christmas presents, then that kind of gets quite interesting. The technoratium of us will move on to more exotic embedded devices. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I was in two minds about whether to put these slides in, and the next three slides are things I produced back in 2000 in the first dot-com bubble, where I was talking about my vision of sort of devices in the future, but I was asked to leave them on. That I think that we'll get to the point where there's more exotic devices where it's going to be possible so certainly closer to the idea of wearable computing, things connected to directly into your line of sight, things like that, so that you can get to the idea that frankly you can be looking through your sunglasses like that and you just sort of blink to see where you want to go and the directions come up like that. So that's it. This kind of thing is really easy to do if you don't actually have the technology. You just put a pair of sunglasses on the table and point a camera through them and you Photoshop afterwards, but it communicates the point quite effectively. Take us on to 2013 or so, so that's my 20 years of internet mapping. I'm going to predict that it's going to be in that kind of time that the OSM node count exceeds that of TeleAtlas Navtech, possibly of TeleAtlas Navtech put together, I don't know. Certainly, you know, if the Wikipedia analogy is anything to go by, that's not unreasonable. However, you know, that's not winning the war, because the definition of, as Etienne was saying, was it yesterday lunchtime? I can't remember. You know, quality and quantity are two very different things, and the sense, well, as I said here, quality of coverage is more important than quantity of data, and quality is a sort of a very variable, is very open to debate. Like Ed, I'm a huge believer in UAVs. Though my approach is different. I take the more traditional approach, and rather than building them and playing around with them, I think you just go out and buy them. They're very cheap. I saw one on the web yesterday for $35,000 that will carry a payload. The base station's a bit more expensive, but you get a few of them. These things, well, you know, one base station could run lots of these things, so could run 10 of them. They're, you know, if they're under £20,000 each, you know, they're cheaper than a car, frankly. You know, what kind of camera equipment you put in them, you know, needs to be determined. But there are others that will go up and will just stay up for weeks or months at a time, allegedly. Many debates will continue. I think it's already some of the issues here of aerial imagery and especially real-time video feeds from satellites have already been explored in really important sources of global social understanding. Have we got audio on? So we're all ready for unmanned UAVs buzzing around all over the place. I'm not sure if I want to own it or be the subject of it or what. Getting a little more serious again, though, the key question really, I think what it leads to for me is, you know, should we be seeing where OSM is going to do, and frankly, what OSM, what you are going to be contributing to the world, contributing to the world's knowledge and sort of self-awareness and global understanding by this kind of time stream, maybe 2013, is it analogous to what Wikipedia is contributing today, even to a certain extent what Linux is contributing today? I think, frankly, the Wikipedia analogy is better. And I think in terms of what Wikipedia is making possible in schools, in educational establishments over the world, it's a mind-boggling opportunity. I think that when we trace all the debates that have happened with Wikipedia in the past about the point at which Wikipedia got bigger than the Encyclopedia Britannica, the point where there was that debate about whether the Wikipedia articles were more accurate. Whether there were more errors in the Encyclopedia Britannica than there were in Wikipedia, and Encyclopedia Britannica got very upset about that. But, you know, the debate was that, well, actually it's much of a muchness, they're just different types of errors. I thought that was fundamentally important, and I see exactly the same things happening in a few short years, comparing TeleAtlas Navtech with OSM, and the answer is the errors are going to be different. But it's not going to be more or less. I will leave you with a thought that I leave people with at Multimap when we think about where we're going with all this. And I said earlier about that this whole thing about those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. So I just leave you with Michelangelo. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Has anyone got any questions?
So for us foreigners here who aren't very familiar with Multimap, what size of revenue do you have and how much of that comes from Britain or other countries?
Revenues are about £10 million I can't remember the percentage that comes from Britain. It's quite high. It's more than 70%. Between a half and two thirds comes from corporates, and the balance comes from advertising on the public website.
Well, I've got a question. Mm-hmm. Where do you see data suppliers going?
I see them continuing just as much as Linux has not caused Microsoft to stop selling, Windows Server. MySQL has not stopped Microsoft or Oracle from selling their SQL databases. And I think, if when I'm old and decrepit and I collapse in the street and an ambulance comes and picks me up, I'm, with the greatest respect, I really hope it's using Teleatlas and Navtech to route rather than OSM, because sometimes this stuff, you know, you actually absolutely need the audit trail. You need a number of things. It's horses for courses. There's always, I really hope there's always a call for commercial services, because like I said, over half the revenues of my company come from providing them. I think there's an ongoing, there will always be demand for what Navtech and Teleatlas do, but what they will do will evolve. The price for street center lines will decline quite rapidly. But you look at the price of geodata over the years. I wish I had some numbers on it. But 15 years ago, everybody knocks the Ordnance Survey for charging £15,000 for a national data set. But 15 years ago, it was £1 million. 15 years before that, it simply didn't exist. So those prices have been coming down, OSM or not. And I think that I think that will continue. There'll be many things pushing those prices down, but there will continue to be a demand for commercial services.
Thank you. Okay. Cool.